Tim McAuliffe, who is the better half, we'll call you that, of Tim and Sid. Do you want to be referred to as the better half of Tim and Sid?
Well, we all know it's true, right, Scotty? So, I mean, I don't know if we have to point to the obvious here. We can just let it rest. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely, man. Mookie Betts is the guy who brought this up for me because I'm a Jays fan. I couldn't do it with Mookie Betts playing for the Red Sox. And I knew how great he was, Tim, but I just couldn't do it. Now that he's on the Dodgers, I love it. And I'll cheer for Mookie Betts all the time. Is there a player that fits that bill for you?
You know, it's so funny because you normally, when you think about this, you think about players that you hate and not the team that you hate, but the player that you like. Like, I immediately, when I heard the question, I was thinking, well, there's going to be a lot of Brad Marchand answers. But that's not, like, that's just the guy everyone hates, and he's on a team that you hate. So the guy that you like or you want to cheer for, but he's on the team that you hate. For me, I mean, it's kind of changed over the last little while, but I used to love watching Jose Altuve play baseball, and then I found out that he was a cheater face along with the rest of his cheater face team, and I don't know how to do it anymore. So if you're asking me, like, the team that you hate and then the guy that you like on the team that you hate, that's hard for me because I always respect the athlete more than I despise the teams, especially now because I've lost a lot of my fandom working in the business. I guess for me, growing up as a Michigan fan, it's probably got to be an Ohio State guy. And I remember when Eddie George went to the pros, I was free to like Eddie George. But at Ohio State, I hated Eddie George. I know that's going back a little ways, but that's probably my best example.
No, we've had a lot of that. We've had a lot of people saying Jerome Iginla when he played with the Flames, who you guys just had on your show the other day. Great interview that you guys had on. But, yeah, you bring up the Astros as well. That's a really good one because of how people associate the franchise now, but they also lump the players into that same category. I didn't think we were going to go this way in our conversation today, but how about Jeff Luhnow coming out on Monday? What are we to believe? Are we to believe him? Hey, I didn't know. I tried to put all these things in place. Or are we just too cynical for that? Sorry, man. If you didn't know, you needed to know.
Yeah, the reputation of Jeff Luhnow precedes him. And what the reputation was and what it seemed like in a lot of Major League Baseball's punishment of that team was that he just allowed things to fester in his organization because his sole goal was to win. And the funny thing, you know what? I might put Jeff Luhnow into that. I pitched Jeff Luhnow's story like 18 times to the folks at Sportsnet to get it done properly. And we just never had the money or the time or someone who wanted to take the project on and do it properly. And the idea of the story is crazy. Like, here's a guy who's an Ivy educated guy who was really good at fantasy baseball and turned it into a job with the Cardinals, turned that into a GM job in Houston, who turned it into something that we'd never seen before. And I loved the story. I thought the story was amazing. And then you come to start realizing that this dude just didn't care about anything else but winning. And there are very many pros about bringing a business approach to sports, and we all know that. There are also cons of bringing a business approach to sports. And the Astros and Jeff Luhnow might be the literal definition of that.
And I'd love to get to the bottom of what was behind it, because there are a lot of parallels between the Astros doing what they did and a guy like Barry Bonds, who we always say, you would have been a Hall of Famer anyway. Why did you feel the need to do that? You were on the right track, and I think we look at the Astros the exact same way. Hey, you were probably going to win a World Series no matter what. Why did you have to do that? I don't know if it's rooted in insecurity or some shaken belief along the way in what you're actually doing, but I'd love to get to the bottom of that, not to play armchair psychologist here.
No, but it is total psychology, and your example of steroids is exactly that. I mean, I told the story on air about how many times – when I was in my final years of high school, I thought about doing steroids because I wanted to be a good athlete. And I thought that's the only way that I had to. I mean, I was a 6 foot, 190 pound linebacker. Like, I wasn't going to go anywhere playing linebacker at 185 pounds, working out every day, trying to get up to, you know, 190 pounds. And the only way I was going to get to 215 or 220 and compete at that level was to do steroids. And I had a number in my pocket and I was going to do it. And if everyone around me was doing it, it becomes a lot easier to do. And when you allow it to fester and when you allow it to seem like it's okay, that's how you get to these spots. And that's exactly what happened in Houston. And that's exactly what happened with the steroid era in baseball. And whenever someone blows up football for what, like we all know, it's kind of based on size, speed, and strength. And I don't know what helps that, but hey, performance enhancers help that. We all kind of rally around it. Sometimes it's almost like we're scared of the truth. And we know it's kind of out there and we don't want to touch it. And I think with Houston, they knew other teams were cheating. The rest of the league knew that other teams were cheating. The commissioner knows that everyone's cheating. And then they realize one team's going way further than everybody else while cheating. And he's got to put a stop to it. But because it's allowed to fester, because it's allowed to almost seem like it's normal, that's when people go way too far in everything.
It's an edition of Midweek McAuliffe. Tim McAuliffe joining us here this morning on the Scott Rintoul Show. And unless you are ultra cynical, both teams playing in the World Series right now fall into a category the Houston Astros did in 2017, quite frankly. They're very likable. The Astros were back then because we didn't have the knowledge of what was going on. Tampa Bay is likable because of the shoestring budget. They play so hard. I can go down the list, and L.A. for the likable personalities on the team for a market that hasn't won. We don't seem to associate them with big money the same way we do with the Yankees and the Red Sox. Which of these teams is more likable to you?
I think it's the Rays. I think it's the little engine that could. But you're right about this Dodgers team. Like, how rare is it that you see a ridiculously high payroll be a likable team? And the reason why they're likable is because they've lost so much and they've got some seemingly good guys in the team. And even like I liked them more when they went after the Astros, like when they were pissed, when Cody Bellinger was sitting in front of the media saying they stole this from us, they became more likable to me. I think it's just the time that they've been jilted. And listen, I was in Toronto when the Blue Jays beat the Braves, and that there is a similar feel to those Braves teams of the early 90s where, you know, you had Glavin, Maddox, all those guys that were really good and never made it over the hump, and you started to feel bad for them. And I think that's where we're at with a lot of the Dodgers. And I think the head of the snake is Clayton Kershaw. And you know, he is our generation's best pitcher, and yet he couldn't do it in the postseason. And I think people at first, it's like this, you know, intriguing story about a guy who is so good and just can't seem to get over the hump. And then you start feeling bad for him. And I think that's where we were at going into that game last night, was Clayton Kershaw became like the sympathetic hero. And when you think about that, it's kind of ridiculous. Like, here is one of the highest paid players in the game and maybe one of the best players in the game. And he was the sympathetic hero going into game one. And he might be the sympathetic hero in his second go around in this series. It's amazing to see what sports can do for us. And the Dodgers are a really good example of that.
Yeah, and your point about speaking out against the Astros and Bellinger and Joe Kelly this year, it's a really good one. And even before that, Justin Turner coming out and ripping Rob Manfred for the piece of metal comment. And it does lead me to this question. Image makeovers are tough in sports, and we've seen them go successfully. A guy like Michael Vick vilified, and then kind of people got on board with the way he changed his life. Who has a more difficult image makeover, those core players on the Houston Astros or Rob Manfred?
I don't know if people care about Rob Manfred enough, but like let's be honest here. Rob Manfred has had a lot of missteps as commissioner of Major League Baseball.
Yes.
And the fact that he did not punish any one of the Astros, in fact, gave them immunity for their testimony, was one of the biggest missteps that he has taken. They cheated the integrity of the game so much so that more players, and not fans, players, their peers, were more pissed off about that than steroid use. Like, think about that for a second. Like, the players were more pissed off at the Astros for that than steroid use. And maybe it was because players couldn't get pissed off about steroid use because they knew that there was a guy on their team that used it, and they were a little afraid of pissing that guy off, especially if he's jacked. But I think that where we ended up on this one for Rob Manfred, and let's not forget, this came after he slapped the Yankees and the Red Sox on the wrist for the Apple Watch scandal and the stealing signs that way. Like, he is taken a bunch of different missteps on the same topic, and it still isn't resolved. So if people care, it'll be Rob Manfred. But I think, you know, like Carlos Correa, Jose Altuve, those guys, more people will care about than Rob Manfred. And, you know, I often think about when I'm talking about the Astros, do you not, Scotty, think about the Miami Heat when the Big Three was cast as the villains, and they tried to embrace being the villains and they sucked at it?
Yeah.
And I think Correa is trying to do that right now, embracing the villain, and Jose Altuve sucks at it. Like, he doesn't know how to be the villain, right? Like, he's always the little engine that could. And now he's being cast as the villain, and I feel like that's part of his yips. I feel like that was part of why it was kind of in his head a little bit, at least defensively, because he still hit. But he didn't hit this regular season. I think they're in that spot where they're like, let's embrace being the villains. And it works for a couple people, but it doesn't work for everybody.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And we can tie these two teams in the World Series into another team based in Texas, because the Cowboys don't get the benefit of the big money team like the Dodgers get right now. And it's pretty easy to get on board with not liking the Cowboys. And people are piling on right now, Tim.
Leaders, calm down, Rentoul.
Yeah, they are 2-4 division leaders, and they should be 0-6, which is crazy. Yeah, that they're lucky to be 2-4. The descent, yeah, in the ranks yesterday, I'm not sure I've seen it like that this early in a season with a new team. How big of a litmus test is this for the leadership in Dallas all the way to the top in Jerry Jones?
Yeah, well, that's culture, man, and that's Jerry Jones has toxified that culture. And if you like, I think it's cowardly, and two, I think it's terrible leadership within the team and around the team. But you don't just get there. That's something that's allowed to fester too. And for me, my greatest conspiracy theory ever, the one that I think is the best that actually is true, is that Jerry Jones doesn't run the Dallas Cowboys as a football organization. He runs them as a reality TV show. And I can give you a bunch of different examples, Scotty, of why and how he does that. The Dak Prescott prolonged contract negotiation. Do you remember he did that with Zeke too? And he said, like, a week before he signed Zeke, he said, I don't think there's enough money to go around here. And then a week later, Zeke was signed, all sealed, delivered. It's fine. I can go to Mike McCarthy, the sleepover. I can go to taking CeeDee Lamb in the first round when he didn't need to take CeeDee Lamb, but he knew this would create a lot of chatter. I can point to him on the quarter of a billion-dollar yacht from his This Is My Spaceship room making the pick of CeeDee Lamb because he knew Jerry Jones' entire goal, and you can tell how passionate I'm getting on this, his entire goal on running that football team is to have Stephen A. Smith talk about him the most, is to have people chattering about what the Dallas Cowboys are and not the results of the team. He is the epitome of the sports thirst trap, and he runs his team like that. And it started with me as like, this is the conspiracy in my mind. And as I watch it go along over years, does it not seem like that's exactly what he's doing?
Yeah, because it's changed. It's changed from those early days. When they had swagger when he first took over the team, it was different because he wasn't
Michael
in complete
Irvin.
Control.
Right.
It wasn't in complete control. Jimmy Johnson had so much of that control, but now Jerry has made it very public that he's not firing the GM because the owner's the GM, and that just doesn't work that way, and he's pretty happy to be in that spotlight.
Without a doubt. He loves being in that spotlight. That's why Who answers the questions for the Dallas Cowboys always? It's Jerry Jones. Like, what other owner goes out and answers questions week to week, right? It's what other GM goes out and answers questions week to week? Like, I don't even think we see that. Maybe a quarterback has a weekly hit with a radio show locally. And if you deep dive into Jerry Jones, he's actually a great innovator. And one of the things that he innovated was pure access through the team's website, because he knew that he couldn't make money off of a TV deal that was an equal split. So he went and he created this website that gave access unlike anyone had ever seen before. And he started making money that way. And that's when I think he realized this is reality TV. Like, he's got some Trump in him. You know what I mean? Like, it's more about the ratings than it is what he actually does. If people are interested, and if he's just yelling and screaming and people are glued to it, he thinks he's a success. And the rest of the world has started to realize that he's the problem in Dallas and why they've never gotten over. Like the Jason Garrett thing. Like, how many years did he string along Jason Garrett just for the story?
Unreal. It is. And he's the ultimate stay in your lane guy. Man, just stay in your lane. Like, you're having a lot of success in that lane. Just stay there and things would be okay. Hey, I'm like
you're
you and what you
there.
I'm like you, so I know you guys like to end on good news on your show. So instead of the takedown Jerry Jones campaign, let's turn it to a positive story that we all love, and that is Chase Claypool and what he's doing right now in the NFL. Tim, what is your favorite aspect of this story as a guy who loves Canadian athletes and a guy who loves football?
That he's a football player, and that we here in Canada, I was reading a story before I came up with you, and it might still be on my computer so I can give credit to it, but it was talking about how he wasn't noticed in BC. And it actually might have been I was wondering which Ryan Clark you were having on the show. And so I went and I wondered if it was the old Steelers safety Ryan Clark, who you see now on ESPN. Like, that's a great guest. I interviewed him at a Super Bowl. But it's Ryan Clark from Colorado, right?
It is, yeah, from The Athletic, who is also a great guest.
Yeah, and is also a great guest, and is also so he was right. I saw on his timeline a story about Claypool needing to get eyes on him in British Columbia, right? And the epitome of me attempt, and you and guys, Jim Mullen, like all these guys who have attempted to tell you how good the football in Canada is, can be personified by what Claypool is, and he's a football player. It's not, you know, we battle for, oh, Canadian quarterbacks can't play the game. They don't have the IQ that kids that played Pop Warner when they were 8 and ingrained in the game have. Claypool is all of those things. Yes, he's a freak athlete, and don't discount that, but he's a football player. He played special teams at Notre Dame, almost to the detriment of his receiving game. Like, people didn't even realize how good he was as a receiver because he did everything so well on the football field. And that's the part that I love the most, is that he went to a team, and I told you this when they drafted him, so it's not something new that I'm getting to. They wanted a football player in Pittsburgh because that's what they draft. They draft football players, and then they game plan around those guys. And for me, the best part is that Chase Claypool, Abbotsford, stand up, BC, stand up, Canada, stand up, is a football player with a football IQ, being acknowledged as such in maybe the most football city in all of the United States.
Yeah, and I can't claim to know the young man, but boy, he represents a lot of the things that I feel as well. And I saw him doing a Zoom call with his old high school and current team, taking questions from them and talking about the importance of staying in school, saying, hey man, I could be the best football player in the world, but if I don't have the grades, I'm not going to be able to show anybody. And he represents a guy who wants to be a multi-sport athlete. He was an incredible basketball player as well. I love what he's doing. I love the platform he has. And yeah, you see me waving my flag, no problem, both the BC one and the Canadian one right now, for what this young man represents. Timmy, we always run out of time, and we've done it again today, but I will listen to you later this afternoon, sir.
All right, always great catching up with you, man. Be well.